Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. My wife is a landscape designer. She's had about a 30 or so year career designing gardens for people, mostly private homes, once in a while some company. And so, of course, that means we have a wonderful garden at home, naturally. It's quite lovely. And on the border of the garden, next to a walkway, she planted peonies. She planted them about 40 years ago. And she started them with what's called rhizomes. Those are plants that grow under the surface and they grow horizontally. They don't send up a lot of flowers, but they sort of look like roots, but they're not exactly roots. Anyway, rhizomes. And she planted those rhizomes all those years ago. They were from her mother's garden. From their home in Oklahoma. 40 years ago, she planted them from her mother's garden. Her mother did exactly the same thing 60 years before that. So Mary's peonies were planted 100 years ago. And she said to me, "These are very precious to me. These are very precious to me." So when we talk about things of the world and we say, "This is rare," or "This is beautiful," or "This is special," or "This is out of the ordinary," these are expressions of things that we elevate to the category of precious. And we give this quality of preciousness to material things of the world, things that we feel are unique, rare, priceless goods to be treasured, to be protected, not to be squandered. And precious is also the quality we give to intangible things, such as respect, love, support, acceptance. When we don't feel those things, we miss them and we realize how precious they are. When we do feel we have, we are given respect, support, and love, it awakens in us feelings of confidence and optimism. And of course, our health is also something precious, especially when we become aware of how vulnerable it is. On a larger scale, people with very few exceptions feel that life itself is precious. But do we really understand why we feel this way about our life? Is it simply because we don't want to lose it? So it's precious, so we cling to it? What is the meaning? What is our meaning when we say our life is precious? What is it that we can point to when we say life is precious? How can we appreciate the real basis for the priceless nature of our life? So our practice teaches us, or tries to teach us, that our life is more than our personal possessions. Our life is not limited to having material things, or having good feelings, or even having good health. Life is not limited to that. It is only when our understanding of our life goes beyond possessions, whether they are tangible or intangible. Only when we go beyond feeling that our life is about possessions can we allow ourselves to see our life's universal spiritual nature. This seeing and this spiritual attitude and the practice that makes it possible is itself precious. Each life is the unfolding of something very big, very, very vast. And we cannot say what it is. We cannot describe it. We can't tell someone what it tastes like or what it feels like. We can't describe the vastness of our life. So sometimes we call it Buddha, sometimes we call it God, sometimes we call it true nature, or the ground of our being. But these are just tentative names for the vastness of our life. And the name, whatever name we give it, is unimportant. Just something tentative. What is vital is the understanding of its nature. So in a universal sense, in the largest sense, a life has no beginning and no end. Like we chant, to go beyond the duality of birth and death. In the universal sense, life has no beginning and no end. It is boundless and endless and limitlessness. It has no shape. But when we don't understand life in that way, we have the tendency to put artificial limits on our life. And when that happens, when we put artificial limits on our life, it appears to us in the form of a game or a project or even a combat. When you look around at the world, you see that's what people are doing. That life is a project that they have to work on, or some kind of a game they're playing. So when we mistake its shape, when we interpret life as if it were a game, we become concerned with only one question, and that is, am I winning? And as we get older, we start asking another question, did I win? These kinds of questions reflect a misunderstanding of the true nature of our life. But even if we feel, oh, I'm winning, that kind of winning cannot provide true satisfaction. And it cannot help us appreciate life's true, precious quality. Because how is it possible to win something that is limitless? So the modern world has become very complex and very speedy. The pace of the modern world gives us very little opportunity to recognize the truth of the life we have. Because we are always under pressure to win or to add value in the very narrowest sense. And if we try to grasp the intangible, we will only become confused and feel alienated. But when our understanding of winning is not concerned with winning in the usual sense, when we don't trouble ourselves about scoring or defeating or obtaining a personal possession, then we can begin to understand the meaning of precious, and we can begin to understand what our life is truly all about. It's never too late to arouse the mind of spirituality. Never too late. And this arousal begins with a subtle feeling that life's precious nature is rooted in the non-material and the non-emotional. In other words, when we begin to understand that the precious nature of our life is beyond what we can see or feel or touch, and when we have that feeling, we have a strong desire to see life as it really is, to fully embrace it and to trust it. Even when the material things and the emotional things that we cherish in the everyday sense are denied, are taken or taken away from us. The starting point for the arousal of the mind of spirituality is a dim emerging awareness that everything in life is sacred and precious. And our spiritual practice is more than the rituals we perform in this zendo. True spiritual practice is reflected in the mindfulness and the respect we bring to our daily activities and to our relationships. And we do it by avoiding careless judgments, careless words, and insensitive actions. When we are careless or show disrespect for each other or for what we do, it's like tossing trash into a clear, life-giving stream. But when we are responsible for the consequences of what we do or say, there is little chance that we will pollute the world because we are recognizing its precious nature. Everything, all things in our world are precious, not just my wife's flowers. All things in the world are precious, and that includes those things that we are not fond of. And this understanding grows as we practice, and we learn to accept with grace whatever comes to us. Delights, difficulties, confusion, heartbreak, joy, wisdom. And when we know that this acceptance is our work and our spiritual practice, we discover friendship and compassion for everything without exception. But without an open-minded acceptance, our life becomes a game, or a project, or even a war. And we become overwhelmed with grasping. So this world we live in is all-inclusive. There are trees, friends. There are animals. There are stones, there are parents, there are oceans, there are strangers, there are storms. Everything is precious. Everything is sacred. But without the vision that comes from our spiritual practice, we forget the true nature of our world. And we are left with only a small view of things and of ourself. So to appreciate the inherent precious quality of our world, we have to develop a very large, unlimited vision of the meaning of our life. And this is our practice. Does anybody have a question? Yes, please.
I've gone through some spiritual things in my life where according to like how I was raised, and I found myself very skeptical of a lot of things and giving myself, you know, putting a lot of my thinking in one bucket, if you might say. And I kind of want to get past that as I evolve as well, but I'm not sure how. So this is my first time here. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice on that? How I can get past those kind of blocks I have?
This is the first time? Okay. Continue. Continue this very quiet practice that allows your mind to let go of all those things that interfere and that get in the way of really seeing what your life is. I think almost everybody comes to this practice for pretty much the same reason that you just described. We all have these kinds of feelings or concerns. It's necessary to change that habitual way of seeing ourselves and seeing the world, and getting past all the conditioning that has created our habits. So tonight is a start for you. So the answer to your question can only come from your own understanding and your own experience. So I would suggest you give it a try and continue and see what happens. Thank you. Yes, please.
Hi. So I'm thinking a lot about my daughters.
Your daughter?
I have two, yes.
Two daughters?
In particular, one of them. I have two daughters. And one of them is particularly, I would say, stubborn, rebellious, whatever adjective you want to add to that. And I care and love her very much. And I would like to teach her or inspire her to see life in a bigger way. I suppose I need to be a teacher to her of the teachings that we're receiving from you or things of that nature. I'm wondering if there's any parental advice of that sort of how to transmit in this world that you describe correctly as very fast and full of distractions for a teenager. their devices and school pressures and friend expectations. How do we help teenagers that are growing up in this world to create that space for themselves?
How old is your daughter?
She is 15.
15. Well, I think what's happening in your family is quite natural, of course. It's happening everywhere. I think the best thing you can do for her is help her to feel safe, make her feel accepted and affirmed. Help her develop the feeling that you will always be there for her. Don't preach. If you've tried that, you know it doesn't work. Let her know that you're interested in her. Always inquire about how she is. Listen. Just be very supportive. And be very understanding when something doesn't work, she makes a mistake or something. Be very understanding and try to engage her in conversation with you. I believe if she feels embraced by your relationship with her, she'll be just fine.
This talk was brought to you by the Cannondoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to cannondoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.